Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hi, this is Paco Romain.
And this is George Chen.
And today on SupDoc, we're doing a deep dive and taking a look at one of the very first hit documentaries, Michael Moore's Roger and Me.
Made in 1989, Roger and Me grossed over $7 million at the box office, an unheard of amount of money for a documentary at that time.
Wicked and iconoclastic, this is the documentary that set the Moore machine in action. We see Michael demand answers when General Motors suddenly closes the doors of all of its auto plants in Flint, Michigan, the city where Michael grew up.
Roger Me is funny, angry, and entertaining, and still ranks as number one on many lists of best documentaries of all time. It still has a 100% ranking on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hi, I'm Michael Moore. In my hometown of Flint, Michigan, General Motors closed the factories and put 30,000 people out of work. To raise their spirits, I made this movie. And went off to find GM Chairman Roger Smith to get some answers. Boy, was he hard to get to.
We're going to have to ask you to leave the club.
Do you want me to call Roger Smith?
That's all Flint.
Call General Motors.
I really don't know.
I'm on the sidewalk.
I don't think we've met.
Do you have an appointment?
Mr. Smith is not in.
I don't understand.
Would you mind leaving?
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
George, let me ask you, how long has it been since you've seen Roger and Me?
Oh, good question. I saw it, I think, in the theater when it came out. Oh. And then I think I've seen it. I can't recall renting it again. So unless it was on TV, it may have been like really like 30 years or something. I don't think I've seen the whole thing again until just like the other day.
Gotcha.
When I watched it for this. Yeah.
What a great doc, man. I forgot how amazing this documentary is. I also saw this in the theater when it first came out in 1989 when I was 4 years old.
And you lived in Michigan forever.
Oh, right. Yes. I did live in Michigan during this time. And Michael Moore is from Michigan. And I worked for General Motors for a summer.
No way. What did you do for General Motors?
Made car parts. So I was third shift, 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. to 7 a.m. Wonderful. And we made plastic car, like basically oil pans and stuff for GM cars.
Okay.
And they would shoot out of these extremely hot like molten plastic machines that would mold them. They're like injection molds. And then they would shoot out, and I had a very sharp knife, and I would cut away all the extremely hot plastic from it.
Wow. And how long did you do that job?
4 months.
Okay, so you didn't get to be union at that point, right? You were not in the auto workers union?
Not even a sniff. No, not even close.
And Kalamazoo is when you did this?
It was in Three Rivers, Michigan, which was a big General Motors city. But it was my first summer out of college, and I was saving up money to buy a car, and I was getting paid $5.50 an hour.
What?
And yeah, $5.50 an hour. And I worked 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., third shift, skeleton crew. And those things shot out every 15 seconds. And then once in a while, the foreman would come over and speed it up. They'd be like, yeah, we got to speed you up. And then it'd be like every 8 seconds. And they would just shoot out.
And did you have a glove for one of the hands?
Oh, like yeah.
A heat glove? Because it's hot you have heat plastic gloves? Off the thing, yeah.
Like, it's like, I don't know, it's 3,000 degrees or some ridiculous. It's super hot. And you have this long knife. And you cut away it's called the flashing. You cut away the flash and mm-hmm. you throw that into a pile, and then you put the thing, you just stack them, and it's every like 10 to 15 seconds they come out. And so at the end of the day, you have just cuts and burn marks.
Burns, yeah.
to this day, the smell of melted plastic gives me a headache.
Oh my God. Place. Yeah. So you really know the inside of a GM plant when they're like hanging out, like just trying to film into the GM plants.
Oh, my
like
God.
At one point, that woman who's the PR person or she just is refusing to talk to anyone. Yeah.
I'll talk to you outside. Oh, you're going to come out and talk to us? No. Yeah. Fuck you, man.
It's a lot of this. Okay. So you grew up around a lot of like auto workers, and obviously Michigan is, you know, known as the home of a lot of the car industry, obviously Detroit and everything. Yeah.
It was the most coveted job you could have in Michigan was working for, when you said you worked for an auto company, Ford, GM, whatever, Chrysler, that just meant you actually made a good living. That was upper middle class in Michigan.
But by the time you were working there, been gutted already, right?
Already. Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, people made good money working for the big three. And then after that, it just all kind of came crashing down, which we see in Roger and Me. It basically starts with Michael Moore being like the GM of General Motors. Roger Smith cuts tens of thousands of jobs and sends him to Mexico for 70 cents on the buck for an hour wage, and basically decimates the city of Flint.
Mm-hmm. The part that I hadn't really thought about was like they just took that money and reinvested it into like other fields, and they wanted to get into like military, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. Yeah, this whole movie is so crazy to watch now. Because it is exactly everything that we're still talking about now. Like, basically, it's the beginning of the death of the middle class, because some people would say that started in the 70s. But yeah, it's definitely smack dab in the Reagan era. Like, this was all shot in the late 80s, essentially.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, he does a ton with found footage and, like, just kind of, like, just pop culture, like, I don't know, the clip art of its day, essentially, for video, like found weird clips. He does a lot with that. And it's also super autobiographical in the way that we come to know Michael Moore as being. But yeah, this was like, oh, wow. I'm like, I feel like this should be mandatory viewing. It is still super relevant to what's going on right now. I'm just like, wow, imagine if this was all happening and there was a pandemic. Oh, you mean like right now? Yeah, it's like basically people getting evicted, people having to resort to like crime, to eating rabbits, all sorts of stuff. All sorts of stuff happens in here.
Yes.
That's to do with just the death of America, American middle class, and also kind of like the end of like the usefulness. It's like, it's not like, it's not anti-labor by any means, but it's just sort of like showing how weak labor has become. It's
absolutely.
Like, yeah.
I mean, they handed GM whatever they wanted.
Dude.
I mean, they were just fine with gutting and cutting thousands of jobs and getting nothing in return.
Now, Paco, when you were, did you grow up knowing about this great sit-down strike of 1936? Is that like common history? Did people not talk about that stuff in when you're growing up in Michigan, like labor history?
I mean, there is that famous mural in Detroit, the Detroit Institute of Art, that you walk by when you're in like fifth grade. And they're like, you know, this is about the big strike in Detroit. And everyone's like, okay. Mm-hmm. But not really. I mean, it's not something we ever learned about. I don't think they like to really teach a lot of pro-labor history.
Yeah, like, you know, what schools in America have any positive labor? I think you read about like the Upton Sinclair in the jungle is maybe right. Like the beginning of it. And then it became corrupt around some time. And then we don't talk about it anymore.
Then we don't talk about it.
Yeah,
anymore.
Dude, I didn't fucking learn about labor history at all until like college, I feel like.
Right.
And I had this professor who had like, he had really worked on like all like the coal mining union stuff, like he had studied the entire history of that. And I was like, hey, this is all this shit that we did. I'm like, oh, right. Fuck. We really fucked coal miners forever.
Forever. Yeah. Dude. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons I've always loved Michael Moore. And you can call him a documentary filmmaker. You can call him a journalist. You can call him a provocateur, whatever. Like I read that Roger Ebert review where Roger Ebert's like, this is how he makes his art. This is how he does it. And the theme doesn't change and his message doesn't change. Yes, he might manipulate some things and might be a bit of a dick, you know, and sarcastic, but this is what he does. This is how he makes his art, you know?
Right. Yeah. I know. I read that article you sent around. It was really interesting to just see again, the context of the time. It's like Pauline Kael really thought that this was like not legitimate. I'm just like, oh my God, I haven't heard anyone mention Pauline Kael in so long. Obviously, I mean, she's long dead, but still like at the time, I feel like it just also like it harkens to a period of criticism where it's like sort of a pre-Sundance, like when you think how hard it used to be to like even listen to a preview of an album and then like how hard it was to like get access to a documentary that was not like for a documentary to get this kind of major theatrical release. Dude. And like build the momentum that this built. We kind of referred to this. This is like one of the first kind of like beginnings of like kind of, I wouldn't even say, it's not even like alternative documentary. It's like popular documentary.
This right? was a pop culture document. I mean, Warner Brothers was the distributor of this doc. That's insane. I'd like to know how he got, I mean, I guess it won a bunch of awards beforehand. Yeah. But still, like, it got major distribution from Warner Brothers.
Like I think probably Thin Blue Line was just a couple years before this, right? Maybe 87 or 86?
I think so.
Yeah, so late 80s, this became, like, a new thing. I don't know if it's maybe, like, because, well, I mean, it's so fresh, even when you look at this now. It's, like, it's such a fresh, like, look at this format. It's such a totally subverts all expectations of like what you expect a documentary to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's evergreen. The themes will always be a current theme. The themes of like jobs, hopelessness, despair, and the reverse of that, which is pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Can't you just get a job? Like, you know, like it's, there's these themes are universal, you know, that's why.
Yeah, I was thinking about like how so Michael Moore's background before this is the first film he ever made. That's the other thing that is like when you think about that.
That's insane.
Yeah. But knowing what his background was before that, it's like he basically was like an Alt Weekly editor, right? He basically created his own Alt Weekly, which was the Detroit, I forget the
Michigan
name. Michigan Voice. And then I totally forgot all of this part of the story. It starts with him being like, and then I got offered this job in San Francisco and I went out there. I'm like, did he work for The Guardian? What did he work? And then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, he worked for Mother Jones and he only was there for 4 months.
Yeah.
Before they basically like fired him from Mother Jones.
Yeah. They're like, get out of here, you weirdo Michigan guy. One of my all time favorite things is when he was like, I don't understand San Francisco. All these people have a job, but nobody's working. All these people are at coffee shops. This is 1989. He's like, there's all these people. No one seems to be working in San Francisco. And like when I was with Killing My Lobster, the sketch comedy group, we made a pretty viral video in like 2010 about like where why doesn't anyone work in this town? Mm-hmm. You know, and I like not even realizing there's that connection. But so it's like San Francisco still hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. Maybe now everyone seems to be working now.
Well, know? Like they're in the cafe, but they have their laptop. Yeah, exactly.
Right. They don't need to be out.
They're not writing poetry. It's not like R. Crumb sketching you in right. a corner, which is also, I think, around the same time period. This would have been also. I was just like the fashion. Look, like 1988 fashion. Like, let's talk about that for 1 second. The hair, man, woman, mullet is, the first non-binary haircuts were coming out back then. Like, it didn't matter what gender you identified as. You just were like, yeah, we all have mullets. That was one of the early,
right.
And the just other odd clothing choices. The San Francisco clothing choices, I think, are stand out a little bit from the, he was just like making fun of like, cafe culture even at that point, like mochaccinos and stuff,
right? Double mochaccino.
Yeah, but I was gonna say, like, the sensibility of maybe like what I thought about the sensibility of what Roger Me is, and it sort of is like, it's not like punk necessarily, but it is sort of like maybe the alt weekly world, or like this sort of like a gen, would you say Michael Moore's Gen X? I feel like this is a Gen X movie. He's maybe a little bit older. He's a little bit older. So what is he?
He's a baby boomer type. You okay. know, like
he's between
54.
Yeah, he's like a zoomer or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's born in 54. So which only makes him 35 years old when he makes this too.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize.
So it has a little bit of like that, like when maybe not punk, but like maybe like angry young man, when you think of like Elvis Costello as a punk, like this sort right. of like sarcasm and yes. irony. Like this yes. movie is. And Roger Ebert sort of honed in on that, right? It's like, it's such over the top irony, like yeah. just the juxtaposition, the editing. It's like vicious, like editing, essentially.
Yeah. yeah. Well, there's humor all up and down, and which is another reason I've always loved Michael Moore movies. And the balls on this guy, man, like it's insane that to be like, I'm going to the 14th floor. And he's like, oh, I can't. Why not? Why can't I go? And here's my Chuck E. Cheese card, you dick. Like, he is so David and Goliath, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like
he sprayed Governor Snyder's mansion in Michigan with Flint water.
Right. Yeah. In the most recent film, which is Fahrenheit 11/9. Right. Yeah. And like, can you think of a precedent? Like, we're talking about everything being unprecedented right now, right? Like, what is kind of the methodology of Roger and Me? It's kind of candid camera is maybe like the most popular culture equivalent. Were you a fan of like Coyle and Sharp? Do you know those guys?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's like, it's all like the candid camera format, essentially. It's like kind of like
right.
pranking people. It's kind of early Jackass. I feel like Jackass is like kind of the where everything ends up being
yeah.
at some point. Like, I mean, it's like, it's like pre-Jackass. Yeah.
It's Jackass with an Ivy League education, you know?
Right.
I mean, he's super smart. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he's got fucking giant balls to do what he's. And then like his cutaways, especially when the Bob Eubank stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just he loves catching people in being hypocritical and being liars. You know,
I was thinking about like maybe not knowing exactly what the precedents to this format are, but I'm thinking like maybe an ancestor to this or like an outgrowth of this of Roger Me specifically and like the kind of Michael Moore style that's present here is maybe like, do you ever watch the early like Sacha Baron Cohen stuff, like Ali G? Early Ali G is very like you're playing an idiot to just draw people right. out, and that's absolutely. What he does so perfectly in this is he yes. plays like, you're right, like he's totally smart, he knows what he's talking about,
super
he's
smart.
Just he created this schlub persona. And that's right. so much a part of this is it's Columbo. That's what it is. Do you ever watch Columbo? It's like you're awesome. Just play like you just play the bumbling idiot and then you draw people out. Yeah.
Something's just not adding.
That's the precedent to Roger Me as Columbo. That's what I realize now.
That's Peter funny. Fall.
Yeah.
That is funny because he loves and like he puts on that like ill-fitting sports coat with his jeans and his old Nike tennis shoes. And people are like, oh, I can take this guy down.
Yeah.
And then he just like lets you hang yourself with rope. I mean, that's what he does too. Especially we were talking about Tom Kay, the lobbyist for General Motors, who just basically just tries to like pontificate and wax poetic and just starts like hanging himself by his own rope, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, he's very good at that. Speaking of which, like there's a a ton of great moments in these docs, but there's one in particular where there's a Great Gatsby party in Flint.
Yes.
And in order to like give back to the people, they hire regular people to be statues.
Yeah.
Which I've fucking done, dude.
What? You've been that. A human statue?
I have. I was Babe Ruth. I'll put it on the website I got hired to play Babe Ruth at Pac Bell Park, AT&T Park where the Giants play. I got paid like $500 and it was the most demeaning, embarrassing, awful fucking thing I've ever done in my life.
Look,
I stood there with a baseball bat and a cigar, and people would come up to me and like touch me and squeeze my man boobs and like try to get me to talk to them. And we had all these different people walk around making sure that we didn't move or blink or say anything.
You're talking Westworld. You're basically, we're like a Westworld. You were like a host.
Yeah, dude.
Well, I think we just also solved the economic crisis now, right? Look, there's all these Confederate statues that are getting torn down.
Right.
Let's just hire some. It's a new deal.
Oh,
just human
God.
Statues to replace Confederate statues.
Yeah,
let's hire people of color to replace Confederate statues.
I like the trying to get Dolly Parton statues to replace all the Confederate statues.
Oh, I didn't hear about this. I know Dolly Parton is in the zeitgeist because of that podcast and stuff. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but I have done this gig. It's horrible and humiliating. And when I got done with that, I saw it through. I wanted my $500. There was a talent agent called Cast of Characters in the Bay Area that would hire people who couldn't get real acting jobs to do humiliating things like this, which I did. So let's listen to this clip of some horrible people.
Some assholes.
Some white horrible
that are now like now in their 60s.
Yeah. Let's listen to this clip real quick.
Meanwhile, the more fortunate in Flint were holding their annual Great Gatsby party at the home of one of GM's founding families. To show that they weren't totally insensitive to the plight of others, they hired local people to be human statues at the party.
So what's it like here in Flint these days?
Well, things are tough here for the people that are laid off. There's still people working, and I don't think it's as bad as people may believe.
So what advice do you have for those who are having a rough go of it?
Get up in the morning and go do something. Start yourself. Get your own motor going. There's things to do out there.
I don't think it's real fair to just pick on the very negative things and publicize them and not pick up any of the really good aspects of them.
What are some of the good aspects of life?
The ballet. Your kids were involved in that.
Ballet, hockey. It's a great place to live.
So that's the Great Gatsby party. There are so many other incredibly weird moments in this doc that I don't know how he finds these people. That's the other thing. How long does pre-production happen where you find the pet or meat lady, you know, before you find her or the guy that evicts everybody?
Fred Ross. Yeah, the deputy sheriff guy, yeah.
How do you find Fred Ross? How do you find that kind of person? It really amazes me, especially in these like kind of 90s docs where, you know, there wasn't this like everyone wants to be a celebrity culture yet, you know, or like it's like there was no Craigslist. Like how do they find these people?
Right. That's a good question. I mean, the fact that he ran like a Alt Weekly for a long time must mean he had a ton of contacts. But
oh, that's a good point.
And also, I think this is a good point too. Like, this wasn't a time where everyone had a camera everywhere. So I think people get into a different zone when there was a camera put on them, or they kind of like they have to start performing in this way. Right. The way people perform in front of a camera in here is very different than now. I feel like it's like that is totally different because we're so inured to like reality television and everything at this point. Did you ever watch the show that Michael Moore did? Like, I think he made one movie immediately after this that was a fiction movie that wasn't very good called Canadian Bacon.
Oh yeah, he made Canadian
John
Bacon.
Candy.
No, it was horrible.
And it was bad. And I can see why Hollywood was like, you know, this is funny. This guy could do comedy. But then really what he did was he did the first version of The Daily Show, which was, I think, called like something Nation.
Yeah.
Like, not Alternative Nation, something like. But it was like, it was basically the format of The Daily Show. And
right,
it was
right,
like,
right.
So it must have been like 93 or something that came.
Somewhere in there. Yeah. I remember when that came out and I was really excited for it. And it was not good. And then he had another TV show.
Well, you didn't think the TV show was good? Or you think Canadian Bacon wasn't good?
No, Canadian Bacon was not good. Yeah. No, Canadian Bacon was horrible.
The TV show I thought was good.
TV Nation?
TV Nation. That is what it is. Yeah, TV Nation was good.
In my opinion,
was good. I mean, I just found a clip of it again recently, and I just reposted it because it was like an interview. It was a segment from TV Nation where it was a guy like interviewing someone in Connecticut where the police test, you had to be below a certain IQ to become a cop.
That's amazing.
And like that guy ended up being like a big comedy producer later, but it was like a lot of people's early, like Louis Theroux got his start, I think, on TV Nation. A lot of people got
start
on TV Nation.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, that is right.
Yeah. So that Michael Moore begat this industry of like edutainment news comedy, like early on, I would say before there was like news parody, which is not the same as what this is. It was like the format of like the genes of the DNA of The Daily Show is totally all up in Roger and Me and that early Michael Moore stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if the creators of The Daily Show maybe even worked with Michael Moore at some point.
Like Liz Winstead or
Liz, yep.
Maybe, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about Pets or Meat for a second.
I wrote that down. I have that highlighted. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because she is obviously the standout for a lot of people. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't know, but Michael Moore made a second documentary after this about her.
No way. I have not seen that.
Yeah, I used to own it. It's called Pets or Meat something is
Stewart
the food
or
alive.
Fryer.
Or something like that. But it's called Pets or Meat, basically. Uh-huh. And I used to have a copy of it, and we'd play it at parties because it was just like, it was all about her and how she got her Doberman pinschers and her rabbits and stuff.
Do you remember the bits of it? Do you remember the story?
I just remember that at some point she had to close down her rabbit.
Oh, that's
situation.
In here. Yeah. The city comes and they're like, you need to dress your things in a more sanitary condition and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. And I think she kind of did that for a while, then completely abandoned the whole project. But she's obviously a little insane. And then like you just don't expect her to actually headbutt a rabbit, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of a big surprise.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember like being in an audience, like watching that in an audience, like there's no trigger warning about animal abuse or anything.
No.
So I guess we should say that if you're going to watch Roger and Me, there is a rabbit gets skinned in this movie.
It's
but like
true.
It just shows you how bad things are getting in Flint, essentially.
Well, and it's perfect filmmaking. I mean, you feel the arc. I mean, the auto mall.
Oh,
thing.
God. Yeah.
It's so
auto
horrendous.
World.
Auto World. And then my buddy and me, like the animatronic line worker.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Now, when you think about it now, it's just like animatronic robot telling another robot that they're friends while they're both replacing humans.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that could have been someone's job to be in a theatrical version also.
Oh, that's funny.
And Westworld is also owes a lot to Roger and Me. I think the entire critique of Westworld goes back to Roger and Me.
Right.
Oh, my God. Auto World is the saddest thing. It's like recreating a thriving downtown inside of a theme park while
it's
the real downtown
gross.
Is completely fallen in disrepair.
Abandoned.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Have you heard the joke
so
I do about
gross.
This? About not about this specifically,
no.
but about like how Halloween superstores are like the ghost of thriving former downtowns because they're always like an anti-gentrification. They're always basically like the opposite of gentrification. That's like a bit I have, which is also very relevant to like Detroit. My bits are relevant, is what I'm saying. I was already thinking ahead about what was happening now. No, It's crazy. I mean, I want to talk to you specifically because you grew up in Michigan about like what has happened in Michigan. And now it's a point where it is like such an important place for like fucking, like, I hope, is Biden going to go there? Like, are people going to campaign there? Like, what is happening? It's, I think Ohio and Michigan get talked about a lot in similar ways. I don't know if, like, the opioid crisis is the same issue in Michigan as it is in Ohio, but, I mean, just around the whole country it is. It's become, like, the shorthand for just talking about, I don't know, like, rust belts is another thing people used to say. Do you know people there still, like, what's going to replace the industry? What's replacing the audio industry for people? Has anything replaced the audio industry?
No, nothing has. And that's why there's still some devastated cities in Michigan, especially on the east side of the state where most of the auto stuff happened. The west side is mostly farm and textile and stuff like that. I mean, I do believe there's been some like tech industry that's moved into Michigan.
I mean, I would do that. Yeah, because you could get, like, you know, your cooling stations or whatever, all that stuff you need. Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of tech that's moved into Michigan. Other industries have moved in and taken place. But I do know, like, I believe in, like, let's say 95 to 2010, like, Michigan lost the highest percentage of 18 to 35 year olds. So that's an entire brain trust that has left your state to go somewhere else.
Even though the college system is world class, like, basically, right. It's a world class college system. Yes. Yeah. I mean, also, we've watched two documentaries about Detroit. Let's not forget that for people that haven't seen United States of Detroit, that is on Amazon Prime now. And yes. Detropia, a lesser film, but, like, sort of an artsy take on urban decay. Detropia. Because Detroit specifically went bankrupt. So that's, like, a whole story that should be talked about. And it's, like, obviously Flint now we associate with just, you know, the water system is destroyed and the beginning of, like, all the crime and, like, all the houses being abandoned, that's talked about a lot in here as well. So this has been, like, kind of, like, in the works, just, like, you just check on Flint every 5 years just to see, like, what America is really dealing with. The canary in the coal mine, to go back to a coal mine
analogy.
Well,
Flint, Saginaw, Ypsilanti, Detroit, I mean, they all got hit super hard and nobody was able or willing to really do anything about it. They were constricting the unions hard. They were trying to make it a work state to take away all the labor stuff, you know.
Right to work, relieving, they say, the right ironically, to work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all the basically conservative political trappings kind of destroyed that state.
Now, Paco, in your mind, let's say, okay, here's how I think it would play out if it was to happen now. It'd be like, hey, Roger, CEO of GM, come spend a day with me in Flint. And then they would. But they just, how would that play out? It would just be like, yeah, you know, I'll drink the water. It's great. Like, they'll Obama it. Like, I'll drink the Flint water. Right, they'll just, like, try to be like, oh, this is not so bad. Like, let's go to the taco truck. Or, like, you know, like, it would be like this kind of, there would be more of a sense that Roger Smith would have to somehow play along with being accountable. Like, I think if we've learned nothing else this week, Paco, let's put this in the historical context of what we're dealing with right now. It's like brands still want to appear woke, like, in this day and age, right? Like, well, not in 1988. Now. Yeah, no way. In 1988 would, like, a CEO of a company try to appear woke at all.
No. But, well, he was Roger Smith did not care about being seen as woke. But, you know, I think in today's world, the numbers, you know, laying off 10, 20,000 people in one stroke of the pen would have been political damage, you know, would be political damage now, I would think. And also, like, jobs are kind of hidden now. Like, you don't have jobs that are the city. The city of Flint was built around the auto plants and the auto workers. Mm-hmm. And when that city stops, you don't really have one industry towns anymore, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Towns that
San Francisco kind of.
And tech's pretty broad.
Yeah. But,
like,
yeah.
This is General Motors specific. It's like if Apple, well, okay, I guess Sunnyvale. If Apple moved out of Sunnyvale, maybe that would destroy Sunnyvale.
I mean, I think Sunnyvale is ripe for destruction, in my opinion. I would not too much. I was just thinking the other day about, like, how when I was working in Sunnyvale during Occupy, and there was someone tried to do Occupy Sunnyvale, and it was like two people that would like camp out in front of City Hall of Sunnyvale. That's like, yeah, that funny. Sounds right. That checks out. That Rooster Teeth their- Feathers is down the street. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, man. No, I mean, like, I don't know if it really is helpful to compare now and then. I mean, I feel like now, yeah, like the this is like the beginning of the bloodletting, essentially, of the American middle class. It's all right. under Reagan. And but I mean, to throw that in, like with like people were also being really xenophobic towards the Japanese at the same time, because they were like buy American, you know, import cars are destroying this country. So there's sort of like a consumer side of it, and then a corporate side of it, where it's like just
right. And Michael Moore just did a masterful job of putting this all together. I mean, it's incredible to think this is his first film and how much it stands up to this day. And his themes are so obvious, what he's trying to accomplish, and he accomplishes them so well in this.
Yeah.
Even with lots of like just kind of some funny stuff with Pat Boone, you know, yeah. and Bob Eubanks. And yeah. I was hoping
Anita Bryant, who I don't really know, but like just... Ugh. Just sort of yeah, the cluelessness horrible. Of these celebrities. I love like how Bob Eubanks just does not give a fuck about Flint at all. It's just like, no. I was born here, but I don't really give a fuck about it.
I also like the guy when they were burning the Money magazine thing. He's like, we've got things other cities don't. We've got water. We've got trees.
Does anyone here have a minor league baseball team?
Yeah.
Not everyone has a minor league baseball team. Oh, my God. But speaking of those celebrities, like that's the other thing of like people try to like solve like this boosterism thing with like just like the most C-level celebrities like
yeah.
Bob, like let's bring in there's a star theater they talk about. And it just made me think about like basically it's like bread and circus, right? Like we can try to convince people that things are going OK, just like. Get a celebrity and get them entertained, and then right. they'll forget about their worries and they'll want to spend money and blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work, yeah, especially no. like who wants to fucking see Anita Bryant, the Star no Theater, one. And
I mean,
it just made me really think about like how the entertainment industry is just complicit in just like numbing everyone to the reality. Except for now, like every comedian I know is like basically an anarchist, like DSA right. person. So yeah. it's really flipped around. I mean, I think there's obviously like now it's like, dude, are you a celebrity? Did you post about BLM? No. You're not doing enough. So it's right. kind of gone the other direction. It's just like everyone hates Chris Pratt now because he's like right. a Republican. So yeah.
Well, the pendulum swings both ways. It'll come back the other way as well. But so, you know, I mean, we have let's score this thing. I mean, obviously 1 to 10 Herzogs, 10 Herzogs, you know, because it's to me, this is like a perfect documentary.
I think I have to give it 10 Herzogs because I gave Tiger King 10 Herzogs. And that was probably a mistake. We've all
well.
we knew that was problematic. And we're just like, oh, I just needed something to get my mind off this.
Right.
Roger and me is like, let's just, you know, curve it with like it's his first film and it knocks it out of the park. And it's like, I think I don't know if it's hyperbole to say like, you know, I've never read Jonathan Swift. What is that called? Like
Gulliver's Travels,
Indecent Proposal, or whatever it is. Like his like you know like it's like a piece of criticism and satire that is sort of a modest proposal. Thank you, thank you. Our production helper Nick is correcting fact checking me. A modest proposal.
Thank you, Nick.
Indecent Proposal was a movie with Robert Redford and Demi Moore. That is, yeah. I don't think they've made a movie of A Modest Proposal yet. If they did, Sacha Baron Cohen would be doing it. But
that's right.
Also, like Michael Moore has done a lot of other things that like it was not as great of a hit rate as this. This is just like tonally comes out of the gate with like such a specific like tone sensibility, a satire and just cutting satire and kind of the moral high ground that emerges from Columbo. Basically, it's like the Columbo thing again.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, I just think this is like a must watch and is still unfortunately as relevant. Also, fucking Ed Asner was one of the producers or like helped. Like I was watching the credits and like Ed Asner, I'm like, oh yeah, Ed Asner's super like left wing and like was like the president of SAG at some point, right? So
yes, he was.
Yeah,
for a long time. Yeah. Oh, also. I was reading, I'm going to screw this story up, so I'm not even sure I should do it, but basically Michael Moore barged into someone's office and was just like, I need help financing this movie. And it was someone famous, and that person
Jared Kushner. No, that was later. That came later.
Now, every year this guy would go to Flint and do like fundraisers.
Oh, okay.
For Michael Moore. This horrible story, because I can't think of who it is right now, but maybe we'll put...
Plug in your own celebrity. Just Chris Pratt. It was Chris Pratt.
It was Chris Pratt.
We'll just like throw out a rumor, yeah.
And Jonathan Swift. Every year, though, they would go to Flint and help out. All right, well, so obviously this is highly scored for us. 10 out of 10 Herzogs. We definitely recommend it. And you can see it. It's streaming everywhere. You do have to pay. George and I watched it on Amazon. It was $2.99. For $3, it's definitely worth watching again, especially with the themes that kind of fit today.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into some pitch a docs. So I know that we've got some ideas that are been bandied about that we think would make good docs. I'll go first. I think it's interesting in today's cancel culture that a doc about I can't think of. I'm having such a brain fart right now.
I think you gotta put it in the Google Docs or something, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's Titanic star.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
Thank you. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, okay. Billy Zane. You're talking about, yes. Billy Zane?
No, Leonardo DiCaprio. He used to have a famous group of dudes that would go around and just have sex.
Yes.
Anything that moved.
What was it his like screw crew or whatever, like
Pussy Posse.
Oh my God.
That's what they called themselves.
Who was in the posse?
Oh man, tons of people. Well, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire.
Okay, so it's like entourage, like the real life entourage type situation.
And they would come in and go out. You know, people would fall out of fashion. My buddies, I got to. Should I say names? I don't even know what's happening right now because I know a big star now. Oh, David Blaine. That's right. Yeah, David Blaine was part of it. Yeah, it was a huge, like, dude. And they would prowl, like, Vegas and stuff for a weekend. Boy. And it's, like, amazing that nothing happened to this group. Out of all the cancel culture stuff and all the Me Too, like, nothing's ever... I think it's really interesting. Yeah.
I feel like there was something with David Blaine. I might be remembering this wrong. I feel there might have been a David Blaine, some accusations of David Blaine. But maybe it's just because, like, he is... imagine David Blaine in Vegas. Like, he could just, like, you know, play all angles. But yeah, so you'd want to do like kind of a Me Too Pussy Posse movie.
I would do like more of an expose of what was happening, who was in it, what were they doing and why. Tobey Maguire, Harmony Korine, just a bunch of has-beens at this point. But I mean, this is like the early 2000s when they were just rolling around.
I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio did kind of make fun of that persona in a Woody Allen movie. I think Celebrity, he kind of plays himself as a guy who's like a sex addict. Right. So I think he references it. Yeah.
Well, I met an actor who was in the movie that they did about the famous rich guy. Leonardo DiCaprio starred in it. And
the Howard Hughes one?
Yeah. What was that?
Aviator?
Aviator, thank you. My Lord, what is happening to my brain?
I don't know.
He's in Aviator, and he mentioned going out to eat with Leonardo, and they would be talking and maintaining eye contact, and Leonardo had handlers that would walk over and hand him, like, phone numbers, and then would, like, point to different girls, and he'd either be like, okay, yeah, that one, or like, no, and then being like, yeah, tell me about these cats you just got to, like, my friend, and my friend's like, what is happening right now? Like, women were just lined up handing their phone numbers to Leonardo's handlers.
Maybe that's why no bad stories have come out of it. Everyone knew what they were getting into, and they knew it was just like for the story for themselves. I don't know if that's true. Or
right.
I mean, I wonder, it's just after Titanic, I assume this did not happen before Titanic when this is not Gilbert Grape action he was getting. I don't think it was like any Gilbert Grape groupies.
No, I don't think. Well, there might be, but that's a whole different subsect. All right. Anyways, that's my pitch a doc. What do you got, George?
I was I have his record by Bridget Fontaine, and I was like looking into her a little bit, and she's like, I don't know, in her 80s and still putting out really interesting music. And I kind of didn't really know her whole arc. And I was looking it up on Wikipedia and being like, oh man, I bet there is a good documentary on Bridget Fontaine. I could not find one. If you know about one, let us know. There was one that was kind of a more generalized, it wasn't just about her. It was about a bunch of different French pop singers that kind of evolved, and I think including like Charlotte Gainsbourg and stuff. But Bridget Fontaine on her own seems like a super interesting person who just started. It's kind of like Scott Walker. Like they started out as like these kind of pop, vocal chanteuse people, and then just kind of were like then making records with like the Art Ensemble of Chicago and like getting like super woo-woo and avant-garde, and she still cranked out like a record last year. So oh, wow. I think like a whole documentary just about Bridget Fontaine. I would love to see. There probably is something out there, but maybe it's not available in the US or not. Yeah. With hopefully there's something with subtitles I can check out, because I took high school French and not good at French.
Yeah, right. I'd love to see a doc on the Art Ensemble of Chicago. That'd be awesome.
Dude. I actually got to see them one time.
Oh, wow.
Right when I moved to Berkeley in the early 90s at the old Dreyer's Ice Cream Factory.
Who was in it?
To Yoshi's. There was four of them. So I think it was everyone was alive at the time. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it was the four dudes.
Yeah.
And I mean, Roscoe Mitchell, I've seen a bunch because he just teaches at Mills and stuff. So, yeah.
Have you seen Pharoah Sanders ever?
No. I have one Pharoah Sanders record I really love. I would have liked to have seen Pharoah Sanders. He's still doing it? He's still there? I feel like he played Yoshi's while I still lived in the Bay. So.
He was always at Yoshi's. When I first moved to San Francisco in 97, I lived at Yoshi's in Jacqueline Square.
Oh, really?
I went like once or twice a week for months. I kept all the calendars because I couldn't get enough. I'm such a jazz head, and where I was living in Michigan, there was very little jazz shows. So to see live jazz, and especially then, the programming at Yoshi's back then was amazing.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I've only been to one show at Yoshi's in Jack London Square, which was Terry Riley. And
ooh.
I was like, we didn't even stay to the end. We're like, this is not what I thought this was going to be.
Yeah, Terry Riley's that's a tough one.
No, I mean, like, I like Terry Riley. Like, yeah. I was expecting, like, the drone-out Terry Riley. It was just like, this is Terry and his son and their weird friend with a purple suit playing, a digital clarinet. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I ordered the soup to just try to get out of there. Right. And then I saw, Jimmy Scott. At the Yoshi's in SF.
The Hammond.
No, player? Jimmy Scott. Little Jimmy. Maybe I should make. There is a documentary about this person. I just want to make sure I'm getting the name right. I think it's Jimmy Scott. Yeah. Little Jimmy Scott. Who did the whole set in a wheelchair. I won tickets on the radio.
What's he play?
This vocalist who had a glandular condition, so basically had a super high. There is a documentary about Jimmy Scott. Little Jimmy Scott is the name of the documentary. It had like this crazy high pitched voice like into his like late 20s, and then basically quit doing music altogether, and then like got like hormone treatment like in his like 40s or something because he had basically never gone through like a proper puberty. So that's why he had this super high falsetto voice. So I saw him in his 80s. He died in 2014, so it must have been like 09 or 2010 or something. I saw him, yeah.
Right. Huh. Interesting. Let's talk about some docs we're excited about that are coming up.
Oh, yeah. I don't really like documentaries. I don't know if you know that about me. It's really one of my least favorite genres of things. What have you seen recently?
I saw that trial. I watch so many docs. I kind of forget sometimes, but I did just see the Trial by Media documentary.
Someone on Instagram or Twitter told us to watch that. It's one of our Twitter people.
Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it. Some of them were a little boring. Some of them were really good. It's a great doc series. It's on Netflix. I'd see the Clive Davis doc. I just saw that. That's really good. The Miles Davis doc on Netflix is really good. I just watched that as well. But those are the most recent docs that I've seen. And you wanted to talk about Bottled Up. You and I had a tête-à-tête, if you will.
This is like how the sausage gets made thing. Maybe this will just end up being a Patreon extra. But we did a theme month. We don't always do theme months. We usually do... in May, we usually do a true crime theme month for our anniversary, but this time we were like, let's try something different. We did a food documentary theme month, and I had watched this documentary it showed up in my feed for some reason, probably because I watched something else about the keto diet or something. It was the Dr. Pepper story. The story of Dublin Dr. Pepper Bottled Up, and we've talked about it on the show before, but I was like, oh, let's just do a whole episode on it. And I'm like, oh, let's just do it for the food theme month. And then you hadn't watched it. And I had booked a guest and everything. And she hadn't watched it either. I'm like, I'm the only one who's watched this thing. And then you watched it and you're just like, yeah, George, you're insane.
I'm like, this has nothing to do with food. We're doing a food theme month. And this is about a soda.
And then I was like, sodas are part of the food family.
No.
And then we just got into this debate where then I posted on Facebook about it and people were just like, well, what do you think of soup? I'm like, this is like gone off the rails.
It's like a Larry David bit.
Like, it's like, I'm like, for the sake of what we're talking about, I think like the story of the Dr. Pepper documentary is relevant because it's sort of about corporate food, factory farm. It's not about factory farming, but it's about like production of food. And regardless, did you like the movie? Did you like Bottled Up?
I liked Bottled Up enough. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was entertaining. I did contact my friend who lived in Austin for years, and I asked him about Dublin's Dr. Pepper, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's amazing. And then there's like a local drive-through burger place, and then he's like, that's the best burger in
Dublin?
Texas. So,
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. PT something or other, PT Cruisers? I don't know. But
E.T. Cruiser's burger.
He said he would send me try to find me a Dublin Dr. Pepper. But yeah, I mean, I like the doc. I just didn't think it was like, there's so many great food docs to do one where it's like, well, it's about soda, but it's a food processing plant. And we're like,
I mean, we're getting into like kind of very literal. I mean, like, you think I'm being the Larry David and I think you're being the Larry David. That's basically what this comes down to. Like, we're both being like autistic about this. I shouldn't say, now I'm going to get canceled for saying that. We both were having like a lot of like strict definitional discussions about whether you could cover.
Podcast.
Yes.
So amazing. Awesome. So let's see. I think that's it. We have a note here for SupDoc news and updates, which I don't think we have any other than we had a great May. We did have a good food month.
Yeah.
Theme month.
Yeah. We had a great
pretty
May.
Cool.
We have a lot of people coming, new visitors to our website that we think want to see.
We don't need to get into it. No.
We've changed our website. Let's just say we've updated our website. That's all.
And Nick, we have Nick with us now.
Nick Coltis. Nick is homie.
He's with us helping out doing some production work for us, which is awesome. But we have no shows to plug other than if anybody here is at all interested in voiceover. I'm doing this voiceover thing on Facebook where I have like a free class and then really cheap other classes that I've been teaching. It's Voiceover with Paco Romaine on Facebook if you're at all interested in voiceover.
My promos are Defund the Police, Black Lives Matter, Justice for Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and George Floyd, obviously. Just like weirdly, I'm like, is this relevant? I'm like, when are we gonna? We got to do some of these other documentaries. Like, I haven't watched Black Power Mixtape yet. Have you seen that one?
I have not.
Okay, we should do that soon.
13th, though.
Yeah, we should do 13th also. So we're going to get into some of this stuff at some point. Guys, I hope you like this format of just me and Paco and Nick silently like chuckling along.
Updating us.
This is what the new format is. No, we're going to still do our regular format also. But yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com.
Recapping reality since 2015.
Our theme song was written by the very talented David Siegel, and our show is engineered by the immensely talented Will Scovel. And if you want to help us out, just share the show. Let your friends know about it and let your enemies know about it.
Join the Doc Talk and check out our hot takes, pictures, and videos on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We're SupDoc Podcast on all of those mediums.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. It really does help.
Find Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on the SupDoc Podcast website.
If you want to advertise with SupDoc, you got a film, you got opinions, you got corrections, hit us up. We'd love to hear from you and what you're docking out on these days.
We'd love to hear from you. Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.